Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda for Wednesday, October 7th, 2015. Episode 11.11, the Week 5 Preview Show. Today, Richard Graves of Sky Sports News will be joining me to put his picks up against mine for Week 5. But before I'll bring him in, I'll quickly recap Week 4 and talk about another coach getting fired after losing in London. And I'll discuss the ref's big gaffe on Monday Night Football. Lots to cover, so let's chomp it in! Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves. Hello, people, wherever you are in this great big world of ours, and however you're listening to the show, either via podcast or streaming it from the website. Thank you very much for joining me again on NFL Rants and Raves. Lots to talk about. I actually interviewed Richard Graves earlier today, and we went for 55 minutes. So it's going to be a longer show, a normal show than usual. It's because we talked about all 14 games. So before I bring him on, though, I want to talk about Week 4 and what happened there. Man, because there was some craziness that I'm still a little kind of like, just what happened. We'll start Thursday Night Football, the Pittsburgh Steelers and Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens get the game-winning field goal in overtime to win it 23-20. But how it even happened, the Pittsburgh Steelers pretty much dominated the majority of the game. In the fourth quarter, Josh Scobie-dobie-doe, twice missed field goal kicks that would have sealed the deal for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Instead, it allowed the Ravens to get in field goal range twice, kick a couple of field goals of their own to tie it at 20 apiece, sending the game to overtime, in which then the Ravens sent out Tucker to kick a 53-yarder, which is difficult to do at Heinz Field, but he nailed his kick. 23-20 was the victory there for the Baltimore Ravens, pretty much saving their season and keeping them in the hunt, at least for a little while. The final there, 23-20 in overtime. The Steelers lose, even though Mike Vick was serviceable in that football game. He still looked pretty fast, but it wasn't enough as Baltimore was able to get the win. Here's the thing, and I've said it on this show for a long time. Kickers. That's it. That's the rant. Kickers. You're not worthy of a longer rant for me. All I can say, kickers. My goodness. So bad so that the Pittsburgh Steelers, even though they traded with Jacksonville to get Scobie, they let him go, cut him, said, you know what, enough is enough. We're going to cut bait, and they let him go. The Miami Dolphins and New York Jets traveled to London to play and continue the international series for the NFL at Wembley Stadium, and the Dolphins were so bad, they fired their head coach. They got thrashed 27-14 at the hands of the New York Jets, a division foe. The Jets improved to 3-1, dropping the Dolphins to 1-3. And the Miami Dolphins came back to Miami the very next day on Monday. That was it. Philbin got cut. He was fired by the Miami Dolphins. Stephen Ross came out and said that Philbin had been relieved of his duties. Dan Campbell's coming in to be the interim head coach. It's odd for me, looking at the Miami Dolphins, saying they got some talent there. But when you don't look at your offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator to be the interim head coach for you, and instead you bring in the tight ends coach to be your interim head coach, I think there's a problem with that football team. And it didn't stem all with Philbin. Yeah, maybe Philbin had lost the locker room, and there's a lot of reports right now going on about Tannehill and how the coach had told the practice squad to ease up on Tannehill and not pick him off. And apparently Tannehill reportedly yelled at one of the practice squad's players after he was intercepted, enjoy your practice squad paycheck, enjoy your practice squad trophy. Now Tannehill is saying that report it's upsetting him and that it's sickening to him and that it's slanderous to report such things. So he's not very happy about what people are saying. But either way, Philbin is gone. The Dolphins lose yet again. And they're in a whole heck of a lot of trouble there because they're not looking very good. Some other scores to report. The New York Giants took care of the Buffalo Bills 24-10. Buffalo, who looked great in their week one victory, now just looks mediocre at 2-2. The Jacksonville Jaguars took the Indianapolis Colts to the wire. Hasselbeck, the 40-year-old quarterback there for the Colts, was able to get the victory with a 16-13 win in overtime. Of course, it took the Jags kicker missing a couple field goals in regulation to allow the Colts to get that victory. The Philadelphia Eagles were looking to possibly improve to 2-2 while dropping the Redskins to 1-3. Instead, it's reversed. They're at 1-3. Washington's at 2-2 when they allowed Washington to drive the field and score a game-winning touchdown late in the game, pretty much chewing up the entire clock there at the end of the fourth quarter to win 23-20. The Carolina Panthers keep running and roaming and moving along. 37-23 beatdown of the Bucs. The Raiders had a chance to win a game that they were favored by for the first time in a very long time. But the Bears kicked a 49-yard field goal late, Josh Gold, and they won 22-20. The Atlanta Falcons rolled all over the Houston Texans 48-21. And, you know, J.J. Watt said that it was despicable. That kind of play that the Texans got. They scored all 21 points in the final fourth quarter. That was after Ryan Mallett had been benched. Brian Hoyer came in. And as you hear me discuss a little bit later on in the show with Richard Graves, what I feel about the quarterback situation in Houston, I won't bore you with that right now. The Cincinnati Bengals keep trucking. They're stay perfect, 4-0. They beat on the Kansas City Chiefs 36-21. They're looking really good. San Diego escapes with a 30-27 victory over the Cleveland Browns. The Green Bay Packers didn't need much. They won 17-3 over the 49ers. 49ers offense right now is abysmal, probably the worst in the league. The Rams upset the Arizona Cardinals in the desert, beating the Cardinals in Arizona 24-22. And I just don't know what happened to Arizona. A couple of miscues early on kind of sealed their fate. Denver continues their winning ways. They stay perfect at 4-0, beating Adrian Peterson and the Minnesota Vikings 23-20. The Vikings actually had a chance in that game. They made it close there at the end, coming back to tie it. But once the Denver Broncos defense got after Bridgewater, they made him fumble there at the end of the game, and that was it. Then on Sunday Night Football, the Dallas Cowboys use a last-second pretty much touchdown pass from Brandon Weeden to Terrence Williams to tie the game at 20, sending the game to overtime when the Saints kicker, Hawker, missed a chip shot field goal. But in overtime, it only took 13 seconds for Drew Brees to find C.J. Spiller for an 80-yard bomb to seal the fate for the Cowboys 26-20, giving the Saints their first victory of the season. And then Monday Night Football, the Detroit Lions losing to Seattle 13-10. Once again, it comes down to one of the final plays of the game. Matt Stafford hit Kelvin Megatron Johnson. He kind of juked one way, went the other, looked like he was about to score a touchdown. And just before he was able to put the ball over the goal line, Cam Chancellor came, knocked the ball out of his hands, and the ball just kind of rolled into the end zone. At that point, I forget the name of the Seahawks defender, he punched the ball out of bounds, making it what the officials called a touchback and giving the ball back to the Seattle Seahawks at their own 20. So the problem with that play is that there's a rule that says that you cannot, whether you're on the offense or the defense side of the ball, bat the ball out of bounds so that it doesn't get recovered. And it was clear batting. The Seahawks defender even admitted later on that, yeah, his intention was to knock the ball out of bounds so that no one had a chance to recover it. The problem is that that is a penalty, and the ball should have been awarded back to the Detroit Lions. They should have gotten it where the fumble occurred, plus the penalty for batting the ball out. That would have been half the distance to the goal. They would have gotten the ball at about the 6-inch line. Instead, that wasn't called, even though it was reviewed, nothing happened, And the Seattle Seahawks sneak away with a 13-10 victory. So basically, if you go to play in Seattle on a Monday Night Football, make sure you don't leave it up to the refs, because now we have to go along with the interception touchdown, or fail Mary, as many people are calling it. We have the fail fumble because the Detroit Lions weren't awarded that penalty that should have been given to Seattle. And it sealed a victory for the Seahawks. No wonder Seattle has won, 15, 16 in a row on Monday Night Football in Seattle. They get all the calls. So not much solace for the Detroit Lions. It doesn't matter that the NFL apologizes the next day and say, yep, that was wrong. Well, so? It doesn't matter now. We lost the game. We're 0-4. Thank you. Here's the thing with the referees, and I'm just going to pretty quickly wrap this up so I can get Gravesy in here. It's time for the NFL to hold its refs accountable. And the way to do that is to take this stupid only two challenges per game nonsense, throw the red flag away from the head coaches, and have an official in the booth with multiple camera angles and reviews every single play. Every single play gets reviewed. That's it. It gets reviewed no matter what. And he's got to get it right. With the technology that we have now in the National Football League and in the world, I cannot believe that the NFL is still allowing refs to make mistakes the way they made the mistake on Monday night. The ref was standing right there on the goal line. He watches the Seattle guy punch the ball out of the end zone, and he doesn't throw his flag. That's a problem. Then, for it to be under 2 minutes, and you don't buzz down to have the official review that? Once again, that's wrong. You need to have competent officials at every single game and responsible for every single play. Take the challenge flags out of the hands of the coaches, because that's just stupid. What happened at the end of the Cowboys Saints game in regulation? Sean Payton calls a timeout because he thinks, if I call a timeout, I'll give the booth more time to review whether Terrence Williams had his hands underneath the ball and is in fact caught it and in fact was a touchdown. Instead, he wastes his timeout. Turns out he didn't need it anyways. But still, you are relying, the coach has to rely on him calling timeout or throwing the challenge flag. And then, you know, you're not allowed to throw the challenge flag on this play, so now you get penalized. Nonsense. Just ridiculous. Have the officials do the job and get it right. And if they can't get it right on the field, make sure you have someone up in the booth reviewing every single play so that every single play gets scrutinized and we don't have any more of these, oh, well, it should have been a penalty, but we didn't call it, so that's it, game over. Dumb. NFL, it's time. You are big enough. You are strong enough. Get full-time officials to just focus on reffing football games. Get full-time officials in the booth manning and reviewing every single play. The fact that there are plays in the NFL right now that you cannot review is ludicrous, and it's stupid. Review them all, make someone accountable, make someone responsible, and get it done. That should not be happening, especially not during primetime football when half the nation is watching. All right, that's my rant. Let's bring in Gravesy. Joining me right now, Sky Sports NFL guru Richard Graves. What's up, Gravesy?
Steve, it's been a while. How's things?
It has been a while. People were saying, did Gravesy stop talking to Steven because Sky Sports no longer has him on? Is that what they like? This was kind of like the Dan Patrick leaving ESPN and then ESPN not allowing any of its employees to go on the Dan Patrick show. Is that kind of what happened here?
Man, I couldn't stop talking to you if I tried. Even last Sunday night, it's like 4 a.m. over here, and I'm up watching the Cowboys-Saints game, and my phone's pinging away with texts from California, and it's Miranda on the other phone. If I ignored you, my life wouldn't be worth living. So there's no way I could not talk to you.
All right, that's awesome. Because Trisha was even like, he's awake? And I'm like, yeah, I can't believe he's staying up for this nonsense, because it was nonsense.
You and me both. You and me both.
All right, so this week, Richard is going to put his picks up for the fans, go against me, which is, I'm a little nervous because you've been on fire the last 2 weeks.
I've had a good couple of weeks. I think I'm something like 23-8 over the last 2 weeks, which is good because the first 2 weeks, I never got past 500. I went 8-8 in each of the first 2 weeks, so I need to rally.
You do need to rally. So where are you overall, total? Do you know?
That's a really good question. If I had your site up in front of me right now, I'd be able to tell you, but I don't.
You are 29 games correct on the season, and I am 31.
That's wrong.
It says
we've had 4 weeks.
It says 29-48 overall, which sounds right. If you went 8-8 both weeks, yeah, that's right.
Okay, I'll go with you. Really? Think about it. Work it out. 13 2 weeks ago, 10 last week is 23. Add another 16, 39 I've got.
Did you miss a week on the site? I think that's possibly what might have happened. No?
If I pull you up, in fact, stop all this.
Oh, no, wait. Hold on 1 second. I get it. The results for week four are not up. Hold on.
Oh, there you go.
That's what it is.
You're robbing me of a whole week.
I am robbing. You're like, wait a minute. No, that can't be right. Well, I see the score for the Lions-Seahawks game isn't up, and that's why the week didn't close out. Oh, speaking of the Lions, what do you think of that ref who missed the call right there? He's standing there looking right down the line, sees the call right in front of him. What do you think of that?
Well, I've got to say that we're quite fortunate sat at home because we have all these camera angles and it often gives us a better view of what's happened than the official can sometimes see. And in this particular instance, as you've got the Seahawks defender going back, you can see the officials right there. No one between him and the ball has the best view in the house. I can offer no defense for him. He just blew the call.
Yeah, it was a pretty bad blown call there. So you and I right now on our site, NFL Rants and Raves, NFLRNR.com/pick'em. If you want to make your picks against us, we are tied on the season, 39 picks correct after 4 weeks.
Wow, you must have had a bad week last week.
I went 8-7 last week because the week before I was 14-2, but I went 8-7. I lost 4 of those 7 losses. 4 of them came in the final minute.
Wow, that's harsh. How did the challenge game go?
Fortunately, that one I was very off. I took the Dolphins for whatever reason. I don't know why I thought they would win in a different country because they're not winning in America. But I took the Dolphins, and all the fans clamored in and they wanted to make that the challenge game, and we made it the challenge game, and I was out of it after like the first 10 minutes.
Look, let's go back to July when we last spoke. Beginning of preseason, we spoke about Ndamukong Suh making this big money move to Miami. And what did I tell you then? I said, I'm going to make a bold prediction
now. You made a bold prediction.
What was that bold prediction?
That Miami would not make the playoffs.
And you told me you agreed and that you weren't going to be on the Miami Dolphins bandwagon this year. You were jumping off it. So why did you take them in the challenge game?
I didn't. Well, first of all, I wasn't really buying the Jets. I knew that their first two victories, they were really good. They were plus 10 in turnovers in their first two wins. And, yeah, they looked pretty solid. But then against the Eagles, they flopped and they got no turnovers. I felt on the road, having to go all the way overseas, that the Miami Dolphins would be able to generate some sort of pass rush on Ryan Fitzpatrick, force them to make some mistakes, and that the Dolphins would generate enough turnovers to win the football game. Clearly, I was wrong, and clearly the Jets were perfect on bringing their own toilet paper overseas because that's why they were so comfortable that they didn't make any mistakes.
Well, I've got to tell you, when you have 8 attempts in a row with goal to go and you cannot punch it in, and to make matters worse, you round off that series by throwing a pick in the end zone, that spells disaster for your franchise. And if you're a head coach, it spells F-I-R-E-D, fired. Yeah. Joe Philbin is gone.
gone. See you later, Philbin. All right, let's get to the Week 5 picks because I just want to put Week 4 behind me. There was outside of me winning some money in the daily fantasy football sites that are now coming under heavy scrutiny here in America. Other than that, I was just awful. I was 8-7 on picks, but I'm going to make amends. There are only 14 games this week, only 14, as four teams are on a bye. Let's start with El Juego Grande Estupendo de la Semana. Do you know what that means?
The biggest game of the week.
There you go. It's it's the biggest game of the week. And for the second week in a row, I have the Cincinnati Bengals in El Juego Grande Estupendo. This week, they host the Seattle Seahawks, who are coming after back-to-back wins. They are now 2-2. Let's see if Cincinnati can go up against the best that the NFC has to offer right now. The Cincinnati Bengals are favorite by 3 points. Who do you got, Gravesy?
I'm going to say straight out, I've got the Cincinnati Bengals. I've been one of these people not willing to jump on the Bengals bandwagon, but after four straight wins, it's kickoff this season, and the fashion in which they've won those games, I'm holding up my hands and saying, look, this Cincinnati Bengals side are not just a good football team, they're a very good football team, and they're built for all conditions. I don't think you can throw any elements at them that'll catch them off guard. They've got a good, strong defensive front that gets after the quarterback. On the offensive side of the ball, they've got a tandem in the backfield, Giovanni Bernard, Jeremy Hill, that can run the ball and run it well and offer elusiveness out of the backfield. And in Andy Dalton, the Red Rifle, as he's becoming known, his connection with AJ Green gets better by the week. And if he can continue the way he starts this season, and that's the important thing, isn't it? Because in big games previously, Andy Dalton has misfired. Well, this season so far, he's been right on cue. He's found AJ Green. He's found Marvin Jones, who's fit again as well. I think he's an element that's gone a little bit underneath the radar. This Bengals side are the real deal.
Yeah, I've been on the Cincinnati Bengals. I'll tell you what. So I have a friend who lives in Vegas, and he places wagers for me from time to time. And last week, I had the Cincinnati Bengals again. And he's like, wow, you really like the Bengals. I'm like, look, in 3 weeks, they have yet to disappoint me. They have covered every single week. I'm going to keep riding them until they don't cover. You know what? I'm taking the Cincinnati Bengals. I'm saying if you can get them at 3 or lower, take the Cincinnati Bengals because they will beat the Seattle Seahawks. Seattle has nothing offensively right now. They just look like a shell of the Cincinnati Bengals over the last 2 years, the two teams that made the Super Bowl. There's no way this Seattle Seahawks is making the Super Bowl right now with how inept they are on the offensive side of the ball. I like Cincinnati. I don't think that the Seahawks are going to be able to, the defense is still pretty impressive, but I don't think they'll be able to stop all the weapons that the Bengals have, especially coming out of the backfield. That's why I like Cincinnati.
Well, my only fear for Cincinnati is that in the bright lights, the game of the week, Andy Dalton on the big stage freezes again. If he does against this Seahawks defense, which make no bones about it, since Cam Chancellor's returned, they've looked the real deal. If that happens, the Bengals have got issues. The problem, as you say, for Seattle is on offense. They scraped together 13 points to beat the Detroit Lions in a game on Monday night, which quite frankly, if there hadn't been a blown call, you'd have fancied the Detroit Lions to win. You've got to wonder what's going on up there in the Pacific Northwest. That offensive line looks dreadful. Russell Wilson's running for his life.
Every play he's running for his life.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Every play, he's scrambling out of the pocket. You saw him strip sack fumble, which allowed the Lions back into the game on Monday night as well. That was returned for a touchdown. And he still hasn't struck up a rapport with Jimmy Graham yet, their big off-season acquisition from the Saints. That's got to be a worry for Pete Carroll as well. But you look on form to this point this season. This game isn't in the Pacific Northwest where Seattle have won their last two. It's in Cincinnati, and you take the Bengals to win.
All right. We'll move on then to our games of the week. I've got a whole bunch of them because there's a lot of good football to watch this weekend. will start in Oakland, where the Oakland Raiders, who are looking pretty good right now, host the Denver Broncos and Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning, not the same Peyton Manning from before, but he's got the Denver Broncos at an undefeated 4-0. Do you fancy them to take care of Oakland this week?
I do fancy them to take care of Oakland this week, but I've got to tell you, if there's going to be an upset, it might happen here in Oakland, because I love what the Raiders have been doing. Even last week when they got beat by a Robbie Gould 49-yard field goal with just 2 seconds remaining, I love the way they played that game and the way Derek Carr's coming on at quarterback in his second year for the Raiders, and the understanding he's got going with his rookie wide receiver, Amari Cooper, who's on course at the moment to finish the season with over 1,300 receiving yards. That is now a real threat that opposition defenses have got to take note of, because if you don't, Amari Cooper is going to blow the top off your defense. So Oakland have got something going. Have they got enough to beat this Denver Broncos side? I don't think so just yet. The defense has been playing lights out all season for Denver. Peyton Manning, the offense, are spluttering along at the moment, but their defense is still winning games for them. They're only allowing around 17 points a game. That's second best in the NFL. I would suspect they've got enough to take care of Oakland.
Yeah, I think the Oakland Raiders have to show, if they want to be considered a team that is going to be there at the end and make a push for the playoffs, they got to show they can beat good teams. Last week, they should have beat an undermanned Chicago Bears football team. They couldn't do it in the end. As you said, it took a late field goal by Chicago, but Chicago was completely undermanned, and they still were able to get the win. Here comes Denver, a team that's 4-0, and defensively, you're correct. They're looking extraordinary right now on the defensive side of the ball. I want to see how Derek Carr is going to respond to that. He's got a big challenge ahead of him this week going against the Denver Broncos. I don't think he'll be able to get it done. I like Denver, and I like Denver to actually win big and show the rest of the world that Oakland, they're still pretenders and still got a ways to go before they can be considered a team to beat.
I've got to tell you, I think Denver win, but I don't think they win big in this game. And that's because
they've got
their own problems. They've got their own problems offensively. Their offense ranks in the bottom 10 in the league in overall offense. They haven't sorted out the situation at running back. They started with C.J. Anderson as their lead back. Now they're saying they see both Anderson and Ronnie Hillman as starting running backs. Well, you can't start two running backs in the NFL. It just doesn't work. So they've got their own problems to iron out. And Peyton Manning, he's still not quite what you expect. Two more picks thrown against the Vikings last week. Very un-Manning-esque. I think they win, but I think it's a lot closer than many people expect.
I don't know. I'm saying double digits with at least 10 points. I just think there's something about the psyche of the Oakland Raiders going up against Denver. Denver has owned them here in recent history, and Oakland always just seems to kind of fumble around and get lost whenever they play a division opponent. I really think Denver takes care of business. It might be the coming out party for their offense. I expect big things from Owen Daniels and Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. I think Oakland has struggled against the pass, and I think that's where Peyton Manning is going to take advantage. So we both like Denver in the end. So there you have it. Denver's favored by 4.5 points. I think that they will cover that without a problem. We'll move on to a big AFC South rivalry in a big division game between the Indianapolis Colts and the Houston Texans in Houston. Thursday night football should be kicking off in about 24 hours. What do you see there, Gravely?
I see the Indianapolis Colts winning just because the Houston Texans are so bad. But the Colts haven't been much better.
Hold on 1 second. We've got either a 40-year-old Hasselbeck or a partially torn shoulder Andrew Luck. And you're saying that either of those guys will beat either Hoyer or Mallett for the Texans. Is that what you're saying?
I'm seeing either of those guys will beat Hoyer or Mallett of the Texans without a doubt. But let me throw a spanner in the works. Andrew Luck is still officially questionable for this game, although everything points to him playing. and his backup, Matt Hasselbeck, missed practice today through illness. So if neither of those two can go, they released Josh Johnson early this week, who they only signed on Saturday, then you've got issues in Indy. But realistically, I think we expect Luck to go. He makes a big difference to this offense. And the Texans, well, look, you've only got to look at what J.J. Watt said after their annihilation in Atlanta last weekend. He called the performance pitiful. They pulled Ryan Mallett, put Brian Hoyer back in there. He threw two TDs. But Bill O'Brien, the head coach, comes out on Monday morning and says, Mallett is our starting quarterback. If you're a Houston Texans fan, this is going to be a long season.
Yeah, I think O'Brien did himself and his football team a disservice by pulling Hoyer out early after week one. I think he made a mistake. I was like, you know nothing about what Hoyer is going to do for your football team after three quarters of play. If you're trying to tell me that you are going to name Mallett the starter based on three quarters that you saw Hoyer play, then you're telling me you made a mistake in naming Hoyer your starter to begin with. And that's not good.
Well, you saw Hard Knocks like the rest of us.
Yeah,
what
absolutely.
Did Bill O'Brien say when he made the decision and told Hoyer that he was the starting quarterback? He told him that he was on a relatively short leash, but he'd have four or five games.
Yeah, I was about to say short leash wasn't three quarters. Come on, that's not a relatively short leash. That's just like one chain link. That's what he got,
and that sent the message right there to his team that we don't know what we've got at quarterback. We don't know which is the best direction to take. And quite frankly, since that moment, the Houston Texans have just stumbled through this season. Their only win came at home to the Bucs. And let's be honest, it's a game the Bucs should have won. They missed three field goals, which allowed Texans to score a few more points to win by nine. It's just a mess in Houston right now.
Yeah, they did struggle to beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at home. I don't like Houston. Look, I've been a big proponent in trying to get the Houston Texans to spend a little bit of money on offense. Because as much as I think J.J. Watt is a superb player, and as much as I think he deserves every single penny that he can get from the Houston Texans, he cannot win a football game because he is not in a position to score points. And in this league, which is a quarterback-driven league, you have to have a quarterback that you have to pay some money to that is good enough to put up points for you. Because at the end of the day, if you can't put up points, you're not going to win. You can win with 19 points against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but you put up 19 points every week against the Colts, against the Tennessee Titans, against the other elite teams in the AFC like the Cincinnati Bengals, Atlanta last week when you play the NFC opponents. You're going to get crushed. And that's the problem. Houston's only averaging about 16.5 points per game. That's not good enough in this NFL.
Well, I'm reminded of what so many NFL pundits say. A good defense will always beat a good offense. The problem is you need to have an offense yourselves, right. And Houston don't.
Yeah, they don't. They don't. So we both have Indianapolis. The Houston Texans, ironically, are favored by 1 point in this game. That is Trisha's special upset special. I'm not going to explain to you what Trisha's special upset special is, but trust me, this is Trisha's upset special. However, I don't care. I'm taking Indianapolis. Even if Houston was a dog, I still wouldn't take them. Indy should take care of Houston with no problem. All right, a game that you're questioning why it is a game of the week. We have the New England Patriots at 3-0 coming off their bye week, going to Dallas at 2-2 playing the Dallas Cowboys. Why do you not think this should be a game of the week?
I'm just going to read the opening sentence in my preview on the Sky Sports NFL website.
All right, this go week. Ahead. Shoot it out.
If there's one game which looks a mismatch on paper this week, it has to be this one. That says it all. The New England Patriots, a juggernaut, the number one ranked offense, the number one ranked scoring team in the NFL, comes to Texas to take on the Cowboys, who, without Tony Romo, without Dez Bryant, just cannot get a win. they're in games until the final quarter against both Atlanta and then the New Orleans Saints last Sunday night. And let's be honest, the Saints are a bad side this year, and the Cowboys never looked like winning it.
Yeah, but once again, you're asking for a team that doesn't have its starters in a lot of positions. At the end of the second quarter, they didn't have their starting quarterback, their starting wide receiver, their starting middle linebacker, because Sean Lee in the second quarter left with a concussion. They didn't have their starting two of their starting defensive ends. They didn't have Witten was there, even though he wasn't 100%. They're fully undermanned, and the fact that the Dallas Cowboys are still in football games should be an encouraging sign. It shouldn't be, oh, man, they're just lost. They're not lost. I think their coaching staff needs to find how to utilize the guys they have right now until the starters can come in. And here's another thing that I'm going to show you. The New England Patriots are only favored by 7.5 points. If they were truly playing a really, really bad team, as they did 2 weeks ago when they hosted the Jacksonville Jaguars, they were 15-point favorites in that game. That's how good the New England Patriots are. They can be double touchdown favorites over an opponent. And this shows me that the Dallas Cowboys are not in that position. They're not in the dregs of the NFL's underworld because they're not double-digit underdogs against the New England Patriots. That's why it's a game of the week, because you never know what's going to happen. And, yes, New England is a juggernaut. And, look, I'll just come out right now and say it's going to shock everybody who listens to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm not taking the Dallas Cowboys to win this game. I've got New England, all right? I think New England's going to win the football game, but – I don't think it's going to be a blowout like everyone is anticipating.
Do you know what worries me about the Cowboys? Everybody talks about this offensive line and how it's so good and what it did last year. Times have moved on. This offensive line, as we heard Chris Collinsworth say on the broadcast on Sunday night, misses DeMarco Murray as much as DeMarco Murray is missing this offensive line right now. The problem is, last season, if Murray got hit in the backfield, he'd make it back to the line of scrimmage for no loss. If he got hit on the line of scrimmage, he would make 2 yards gain. Whereas this year, if Joseph Randle gets hit in the backfield, it's a 2 yard loss. If he gets hit at the line of scrimmage, it's hit at the line of scrimmage, no gain. And you look at the rushing statistics over the last two games, Dallas started with a couple of explosive plays against the Atlanta Falcons, and then the rushing game disappeared. Sunday night against the New Orleans Saints, they had 28 rushing attempts. Three of those went to Dunbar for 45 yards on one attempt, Darren McFadden for 14 yards on one attempt, Joseph Randle for 14 yards on one attempt. The other 25 attempts went for 42 total yards. That is not a running game. And if the offense cannot generate points themselves, then this defense, no matter how much everybody thinks it has improved this year, is not going to be able to do enough to help Dallas win games.
But Richard, listen to what you're saying right there. That right there just shows me it's on the coaching staff, not on the runners. In the first halves, they run the football well. In the second half, the defense, the other team, makes an adjustment. They start filling gaps. They start run blitzing, and the Cowboys don't do anything to combat that. That's not the running back's fault. He has to run the play that the coaches call. And if the coaches cannot see the other team has made an adjustment defensively and are now run blitzing to stop your run, well, that's on the coach. You got to be able to change that. And you have to know, I have Brandon Whedon under center. I don't have Tony Romo. Because Tony Romo's in there and you try to run blitz, guess what? He's going to carve you up. Well, you don't have Tony Romo. You have to know Brandon Whedon isn't going to see these run blitzes coming now in the second half. He's not going to make the adjustment. He's not going to call out of a run play to throw the football because he's just not confident enough to do that. Because the coaches are going to say, why didn't you run the play we called? He's going to be like, well, I saw this. No. You run the play we call, and the coaches need to help him do that. They need to help him understand that. That's the problem.
I hear people saying, well, when you see the opposing defense load the box against the run, you've got to take your shots deep. I look at the game against the New Orleans Saints on Sunday night, and Brandon Whedon tried to take a few shots deep. The problem was Terrence Williams, with the exception of his touchdown catch right at the end of the game, wasn't getting open, and it wasn't like the Saints defensively were doing anything special. He wasn't being double teamed. They were going into man coverage, and they were able to handle the Cowboys wide receivers.
Yep.
This is the problem for Dallas. Without Dez Bryant on the field to win those one-on-one matchups, or without Tony Romo under center being able to perform his Houdini act and engineer a breakdown in play to find a receiver open, Dallas are not able to knock the top off the opposing defense.
So what are you saying? It's time to call T.O. back? I mean, because he's waiting by the phone. He's waiting.
This is the problem. There are no other options for Dallas, and T.O. is way past it. He couldn't beat one-on-one coverage in the final year of his playing career. He's certainly not going to manage to beat it whilst he's in his Zimmer frame right now.
Zimmer frame, that's awesome. Well, here come the New England Patriots. They're fresh off of bye. They're riding high. Do you think maybe they got a little rust during the bye week, or are they just going to come out and be humming again?
No way. I don't have the stat in front of me under Bill Belichick to see what the New England Patriots record is coming out of a bye, but I reckon you can count on one hand the amount of games that they've lost when they had 2 weeks to prepare for the opposition. I would love to be able to give you some hope and offer a way in which the Dallas Cowboys cause a major upset here, but on the defensive side of the ball, on the offensive side of the ball, in every aspect of this game, the New England Patriots are too strong for the Cowboys.
All right. Well, we both have the New England Patriots to win that one. Moving on to the next game of the week, the New Orleans Saints travel to the city of brotherly love to face the Philadelphia Eagles. Who do you got in this one, Gravesy?
I've got the Eagles, but not with any confidence. I think this is a game of two poor, poor football teams.
This is the only reason why I'm taking the Philadelphia Eagles. One, they're at home. And two, if the New Orleans Saints had to go to overtime to defeat an understaffed, undermanned Dallas Cowboys football team, the Philadelphia Eagles should be able to do something to combat that. They should be able to win that football game.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? And the only reason I'm going with the Eagles, to be perfectly honest, is because they've got home field advantage.
Yeah, they're home.
And it is a game that they have to win. If they lose this game on Sunday, you watch the whole thing implode in Philly. And Chip Kelly and his much-vaunted offensive scheme that was going to revolutionize the NFL, they're going to be chased out of town. You look at where they are offensively, they rank in the bottom 10 in the NFL. Defensively, they rank 21st. They allowed the Washington Redskins, an almost anemic offense themselves, to march 90 yards up the field on Sunday, shoot 5.5 minutes off the clock, and score the go-ahead game-winning touchdown. This Eagles team, every time I see them, they can't get out of their own way. And their only win this season came up in New York against the Jets. And why was that? It's because the Jets imploded themselves in that game. In the second half, the Eagles were shut out. The Jets very nearly came back and stole it themselves. It is bad in Philadelphia. If you have that stinky right there right now, this is the moment you use it. It has nothing, no taste, no nothing.
That's right, nothing. No, nothing. All right, so we both have Philadelphia. Are we going to disagree on any games here?
I think we will. I'm pretty sure I've got one here which will amaze everybody and have people thinking I've taken leave of my senses.
All right, let's travel to San Diego where the San Diego Superchargers host the Pittsburgh Steelers. Pittsburgh Steelers coming off that demoralizing Thursday night football loss at the hands of the Baltimore Ravens, where Josh Scooby-Dooby-Doo, their kicker, missed two field goals. They never went to him again. They wind up losing the game in overtime to Baltimore. They've subsequently canned, or sacked, as you would say over there, their kicker, Josh Scobie. But here they come with Michael Vick again at the helm to play the Chargers. What do you got?
Yeah, Chris Boswell is the man that they've signed to their roster to replace Josh Scobie. So no pressure on him coming into this week's game. I've got the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'll repeat that. I've got the Pittsburgh Steelers for this one. I know Antonio Brown, their star wide receiver, has come out in the press today and said, well, Michael Vick just gets the ball out a little later than Ben Roethlisberger does, and it's a timing issue. But I think an extra, a full week of practice, because let's not forget, Michael Vick only had 4 days, 3 days really, to practice with the first team ahead of that game against the Ravens last Thursday night. So they've now had 9 days to build up to this trip to San Diego. I think with Le'Veon Bell in the backfield as well, you know, 129 rushing yards from him against the Ravens. He's a big factor here. They've got Martavis Bryant back after his four-game suspension. On the flip side, and this is why I don't like the Chargers this week, they're a team being held together by sticky tape and glue right now. They lost wide receiver Stevie Johnson with an injury in the win over the Cleveland Browns last Sunday evening. They lost Malcolm Floyd as well. He's undergoing concussion protocol. They were down to their final two first-choice starting offensive linemen in that game, and it's all on the back of Phillip Rivers at the moment. I think, and most people would agree, that the Steelers, as an all-round football team, are better than the Browns, and I think the Steelers have got enough to go into San Diego and get the win.
Yeah, I don't know. You asked me to pick between Michael Vick and Phillip Rivers, and even though Phillip Rivers has to do it all on his own, I'm going to go with Phillip Rivers. I like how he's been connecting with Ladarius Green, the tight end, which is the heir apparent to Antonio Gates. Plus, Gates is back, so he's got two top weapons there. Keenan Allen has still been phenomenal, and I think this is the week that Melvin Gordon breaks out. We've been waiting for him to kind of – he's been getting his yards, but just not in any dynamic fashion. I think he has a couple big runs in this football game. They're at home. They've been at homes for the second weekend in a row. They got some nice home cooking in them now. They get to relax in their own bed. And come Monday night, they'll be ready for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think they're going to get after Michael Vick, unlike the Ravens were able to get after Michael Vick. I think the Chargers will be able to do that. The Chargers are favored by 3, and I actually like them to win by that field goal.
I've got to tell you, at the start of this season, I was quite high on the San Diego Chargers. They struggled to get past the Detroit Lions in a high-scoring affair week one. They were hugely disappointing in weeks 2 and 3, both of which ended in defeats for them. And last week, again, they were lucky to get past the Cleveland Browns. But for the Browns shooting themselves in the foot, jumping offside, they don't get that game-winning field goal as time expires. And given all the injury problems they've got as well, I'm just not sold on the San Diego Chargers right now. And until they prove me wrong, I go with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
All right, so that's the first game we differ on. I get to pick the challenge game this week since I lost last week. Stupid Dolphins. hey, good news is the Dolphins are on a bye, and this just
in. Will you now finally jump off that bandwagon?
Oh, I'm off the bandwagon. I'm off. And as a matter of fact, this just in, I hear that the bye week is actually winning 3-0 over the Dolphins right now. So there you go. San Francisco travels across the country to face the New York Giants in New York. Giants favored by 7. San Francisco, it looks like the wheels have fallen off that wagon, and Jim Tomzula's just dragging it, sparks shooting out the back of the wagon as he drags it down the street. San Francisco just looks really bad. This was the team everyone was expecting.
This was the team everyone was expecting. It was the team that everybody was like, wow, after week one, when they somehow managed to get by the Minnesota Vikings. But this is a quote from Jim Tomsula today. I want a confident man, full bore ahead at that position. He's talking about the quarterback. And I believe in the quarterback. I believe in Colin Kaepernick. Well, Jim Tomsula, you're the only person walking the face of this planet that believes in Colin Kaepernick right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't believe in Colin Kaepernick. He's been awful. He's just really looked like a shell of the quarterback that he was previously when he led that team to the playoffs and into the Super Bowl. He just doesn't look like he's making decisions fast enough. He's not decisive with his throws. He's hesitating, and that's why he's getting picked. And
he has no pocket awareness. That's his first problem when he's under center. He got sacked 6 times by the Green Bay Packers in last weekend's defeat. And whereas in that rookie year that he had, or his first year starting for the San Francisco 49ers, they'd get him out in space, they'd make the playbook simple, they'd allow him to use his legs to cut open defenses. That's no longer working. And did you see that snippet of Clay Matthews when he was sacked in the second half of that game against Green Bay last week? Not only does Clay Matthews jump up and kiss his bicep a la Colin Kaepernick when he's in the end zone,
yes,
but then you hear him shout out, "You're no Russell Wilson, bro." The yeah. final slap in the face, the insult, and the plain fact of the matter is that everybody in this league agrees with that statement. Colin Kaepernick puts fear in nobody in this league right now. And, you know, in a struggling team like the San Francisco 49ers are, you just struggle to see with Kaepernick under center how this team moves forward.
Well, he certainly has to show something in this game. If they go to New York and they get blown out again, look, in the past 2 weeks, in two games, that offense has scored 10 points. 10 in two games. I think I scored 10 points last week by myself. 10 points, 7 against Arizona, 3 against Green Bay. If they don't score double-digit points in this football game, Tom Sula is going to have no choice but to replace Colin Kaepernick and try and get a spark, get a life for that offense, get some sort of identity. Otherwise, the San Francisco 49ers are going to struggle all year long. I like the Giants in this one. Look, I want to cheer for the San Francisco 49ers just for the sole fact that I need the Giants to lose. I need the Eagles to lose. I'm going to be cheering very, very hard for the Saints and for the 49ers, okay? Because I need those teams to lose, because I know my team, the Cowboys aren't going to, they're not going to beat the Patriots. We've already talked about
that. Let me stop you right there. I hate to burst your bubble, but the 49ers are not going cross-country and winning this game. You sacked 6 times last week, picked off 4 times the week before in Arizona, 2 returned for a touchdown, marshalling an offense which ranks dead last in the NFL in points scored. They're averaging just 12 points a game. That's
Stranger
not enough.
Things have happened, okay? I'm not saying they're going to win. I'm just saying I will be cheering for them to win.
Are you backing the San Francisco 49ers?
No, I've got the Giants
Let's
to win.
Move on.
All right, we're moving down to games of interest, and we'll start in Detroit, where you got a feel for the Detroit Lions. They're 0-4. They've been basically, the NFL has said, yeah, the refs made a mistake. It was batting. You can see it. You should have the ball at the 6-inch line. But you know what? Hey, people make mistakes. There's nothing we can do about it. You're still 0-4. Here come the Arizona Cardinals that are going to be madder than a hornet on a June bug, butt naked on the 4th of July. That's how mad the Arizona Cardinals are right now. They're going to get after Detroit. They know that they let one slip away last week against the St. Louis Rams. Detroit is a home dog. Arizona's favored by 3 points. Who do you like?
I like Arizona.
Yeah, so do I.
Flat out, I like Arizona. I think Detroit, on a short week, they come off a soul-sapping defeat in Seattle, where they feel, rightly so, that an officiating call cost them a shot at the game. They've got problems with their offensive line as well. Matt Stafford has been beaten black and blue in the 4 games they've played this year. Their line just cannot protect him. For all the preseason hype about Amir Abdullah, their rookie running back, aside from an opening spurt against the Chargers, we've seen nothing from him. We've seen nothing from Joik Bell in the backfield. We've seen nothing from Calvin Johnson, who's been limited to about 10 yards a reception in this season so far, which is very un-Megatron-like. And now they come up against Arizona's 7th-ranked defense, who feast on errors from opposing quarterbacks. And I think the Arizona Cardinals feast in the Motor City this week.
All right. I like Arizona as well. There's something going on with that Lions offense. They're certainly not the offense from a few years ago. Remember, everything Matt Stafford would get in trouble, he would just throw it in the general direction of Calvin Johnson, and Calvin would come up with a football, and everybody would be like, wow.
Well, remember that pass he made when they were trailing by 3 scores in Dallas, and Calvin Johnson's at the back of the end zone, triple coverage on Megatron. He goes up, grabs the ball, begins the comeback, scoring the touchdown. That doesn't happen anymore.
No.
And what's more, it hasn't happened since the start of last season.
Yep.
The biggest difference difference between the Detroit Lions of 2014 and the Lions of 2015 is on the defensive side of the ball. Nick Fairley and Ndamukong Suh, two big warthogs in the middle of that defensive line, they're both gone now, on with different teams. They brought in Haloti Ngata. He's been injured for some of this season, and their defense just doesn't make the impression that it did 12 months ago.
Yeah, they're not going to get after the quarterback.
Their offense hasn't changed. Still been pretty poor. The difference is their defense carried them in 2014.
Yeah, and that's not happening this year. I like Arizona. They should be able to put up points, get back to their winning ways up there against the Lions. Moving on to Kansas City Arrowhead, where the Chiefs are hosting the Chicago Bears. The Bears are dogs. Kansas City favored by 9 points. Woo, that's a big number. What do you see there?
I'm going to go with the Kansas City Chiefs, but I tell you, it's a big game in Arrowhead for the Chiefs, because they lose this and they're almost already counted out of the AFC West. They've been disappointing in the last few weeks.
They are disappointing.
This season, for some reason, is uncannily running similar to the way last year went for them as well, when they came in with big expectations and then just flat out bombed. They went to Houston week one. Everybody's raving about them because they walloped the Houston Texans. You put that in context now, it's a game they should have won given the way the Texans are playing. But since then, you know, they went to Green Bay and got hammered there. No shame in losing in Green Bay, but they got hammered. They go to Cincinnati last week and get hammered again. Andy Dalton torched them for 321 yards. In the air, and then that tandem that Cincinnati have in the backfield of Bernard and Hill, they got 124 yards on the ground as well. So you've suddenly got a Kansas City Chiefs team, which is built on defense, not able to stop the run, not able to stop the pass. And when you're shipping points and yards so easily in games, it puts a lot of pressure on your offense. And let's be honest, aside from Jamaal Charles, there isn't what you'd term an elite player in this offensive side for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, I'm going to pick the Kansas City Chiefs to win this football game, and I'm just going to give on this caveat in saying I put it on Andy Reid not allowing Alex Smith to throw the football down the field. They are still doing this, hey, we can do 2-, 3-, 4-yard little dumps, and our players are going to break it and go wild and run it for, you know, 80 yards. Throw the ball down the field. If you don't throw the ball down the field, the defenses are going to stack that line. They're going to stop Jamaal Charles, take him away from you, and say, hey, we know you don't trust Alex Smith to throw the football down the field, so we're going to dare you. We're basically going to dare you to throw the football down the field. They won't let him do it, and Kansas City always finds themselves in a close football game. That's what happened with Denver. This is a game that they dominated, but they just couldn't put Denver away because they wouldn't put Denver away. They were like afraid. They were playing afraid to lose. And what happened? They wound up losing the football game. So I like Kansas City, but they have got to be able to get up on Chicago early and put them away early and not be afraid to stretch the field. So we both have the Chiefs.
And what you were saying there about stretching the field, I think that's what Chiefs fans will look at the last two games and be hoping they see more of. Because Jeremy Maclin, their big off-season free agent signing from Philly, he's had back-to-back 100-yard receiving games now.
Yep.
Found his way into the end zone as well. So they'll be looking for more of that. And I think they catch a break this week with Chicago coming into town.
Yeah, their defense is not the defense of old.
Yeah, exactly. Jay Cutler's back there, and he gives them an upgrade on Jimmy Clausen, but he's still playing injured. Alshon Jeffrey's still missing, injured as well. So they're relying on Matt Forte. The defense, as you say, is in transition. It's not what it used to be, so I think the Chiefs get this one.
Yeah, we both like the Kansas City. Two more games of interest before we knock out the nap games real quick. The St. Louis Rams, coming off a pretty big win over the Arizona Cardinals, travel to Green Bay to face the Packers.
I don't know what to make of the St. Louis Rams. They are frustratingly erratic this season. You know, they're turning in a great performance week one to come out on top over the Seattle Seahawks. But then they falter against the Washington Redskins. They lose a close one back at home to the Steelers. And then they go to Arizona in the desert. The 3-0 Cardinals, who've been ripping everyone apart. And they capitalize on a few Cardinals' offensive errors. And they capitalized the extent that they get a win in the desert, which I think is hugely impressive. And then you see this rookie running back, which everybody's been talking about, Todd Gurley, taken 10th overall in the draft. He has his coming out game. 100 yards rushing in the fourth quarter. Do you realize that is more than Matt Forte, Carlos Hyde, and Mark Ingram have totaled combined against the Cardinals this season? I love what I saw last Sunday night from Todd Gurley. And you've got to believe that if he can stay healthy, he is now the centerpiece of this St. Louis Rams offense. That being said, the Green Bay Packers face a team similar to this twice a season, every season, in the Minnesota Vikings. They have Adrian Peterson, and the Packers take care of them. The St. Louis Rams don't have Adrian Peterson. Todd Gurley's good, but he's still learning his trade. The Packers take this one.
Yeah, even though everything you said about Gurley is true, and I like the kid as well, the problem is St. Louis just doesn't really have that juggernaut of an offense that could just put up points. And in Green Bay, you know, last time they were in Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers threw 5 touchdown passes. Well, Nick Foles and the St. Louis Rams aren't going to be able to match and go toe-to-toe with the Green Bay Packers for that. I'm not saying that Aaron throws for 5 touchdown passes in this game, but I am saying that something happens in Green Bay where he and his offense just seem to hum. I think they'll be humming again this week, and they'll take care of business taking care of St. Louis.
And I'll tell you what else as well. Yep. Look out for the tight end Richard Rodgers. A lot of was talked about him under the radar in preseason as being a major red zone threat. I think in the last couple of weeks, especially since Andrew Qualls was lost to injury, Rodgers has become more prominent. We saw him find the end zone last weekend against the San Francisco 49ers. Everyone talks about James Jones, Randall Cobb. Watch out for Richard Rodgers in the red zone.
Yeah, he does. He has 2 touchdowns over the last 3 games, so certainly watch out for that tight end. Final game of interest, the Washington Redskins travel to Atlanta to face the Atlanta Falcons. The Falcons are humming. They're coming out here saying, hey, we are for real, putting up 48 points last week against the Houston Texans. I like Atlanta in this game because I just don't think the Washington Redskins were able to put that drive together at the end of the game, beat the Philadelphia Eagles. There's just no way they're going to be able to continue to keep up with the Atlanta Falcons.
Well, we spoke about this a little earlier, didn't we, when we mentioned the Philly game last week and this anemic Washington Redskins offense. Look, you're dealing with an Atlanta Falcons offense that's averaging around 30 points a game this season. You're not going to live with that if you're the Washington Redskins. And the impressive thing about the Falcons last week is that everyone's been talking about Julio Jones and what a beast he's been through the first 3 weeks, scoring touchdowns, chewing up yardage, chewing out defensive backs. Well, last weekend, they only went to him on 4 occasions. It was on the ground where they really beat the Houston Texans, a defensive front that contains Jadeveon Clowney and J.J. Watt. And you know what? The Falcons just ran it straight up the gut. Devonta Freeman finished with 80-odd rushing yards, 3 touchdowns. They were able to pull him midway through the third quarter. And the backup running back on the day, who I think is their 3rd string overall, he finished with around 100 rushing yards. So this Atlanta Falcons offense is humming on all cylinders right now. And they just have way too much for Kirk Cousins and the Washington Redskins.
Yep, I agree. So Atlanta there. So far, only 1 game we differ on. Pittsburgh at San Diego. You've got the Steelers. I've got the Chargers. 3 nap games. I'm going to put them out there. Just give me the team you're taking and why. Buffalo at Tennessee.
Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, but I've got the Bills.
There's a caveat to this. Uh-oh. And that is Sammy Watkins has missed practice this week. Still injured. LeSean McCoy is still sidelined by a hamstring injury. Carlos Williams, the backup running back, is now undergoing concussion protocol after complaining of feeling unwell following Sunday's defeat to the Giants. So now you're down to Anthony Dixon as your starting running back. And the Buffalo Bills are running out of pieces. That being said, I think they're a better team all around than the Tennessee Titans. Rex Ryan will have some new looks for rookie quarterback Marcus Mariota, and it could be a game where the Bills' defense wins the day.
All right, I've got the Bills as well. As much as I like Marcus Mariota, I just don't think he's going to be ready for whatever kind of lineups and adjustments Rex Ryan's going to throw at him. Cleveland at Baltimore. Baltimore favored by 6.5. Go.
I told you at the top of the show, there's one game when you're going to say, has Richard taken complete leave of his senses? This is it. In Baltimore, I'm taking the Cleveland Browns to win this Sunday.
What? Cleveland Browns to win this week? At Baltimore. Baltimore coming off their first win of the season. They're feeling pretty good about themselves. They're at home. They've had a couple more days of rest. Cleveland last week played on the road all the way across the country in San Diego. Now they're coming back, and you've got them winning? Oh, that's the challenge game right there. I got the Baltimore Ravens. Lock it in. Lock it in before he changes his mind.
Tell me who the number one receiver in Baltimore is starting this week.
Travis Benjamin? Oh, for
no.
Kamar
Aiken.
For the Ravens. Okay,
yes.
I'm sorry. What's wrong with Aiken?
Do you know who he is?
I've heard the name.
You've heard the name. You don't know who he is. Neither does anybody else. And do you know why that is? It's because Baltimore Ravens players are falling as quickly as the ones in Dallas right now. Steve Smith is out with four broken ribs. Campanaro, who scored a touchdown for them in the win over the Steelers, he's out for the season. He's on season-ending IR as well. Breshad Perriman hasn't even taken the field, really, competitively for the Ravens this year with his knee injury. He's had a relapse of that and is gone. They've got Justin Forsett, who had a great game. I'm taking nothing away from Justin Forsett last week against Pittsburgh. But that is all they've got. They've lost Terrell Suggs, the heartbeat of this defensive front for the Ravens as well. And you look at the Cleveland Browns, and I loved what they did last week in San Diego. Josh McCown got the offense moving up and down the field, finished with 356 passing yards. He's got a new weapon that he's developed chemistry with. Tight end Gary Barnidge found him for two touchdowns as well. They can run the ball. And defensively, the Cleveland Browns are not a bad side. You have to be a good offense to get beyond this Cleveland Browns defense. And I know they're away from home for the second straight game, going across country. And their record says they've got no chance at all. Just one win this season.
I don't think the Ravens cover the 6.5, but they'll find a way to win this football game. I don't trust Cleveland as far as I could throw them. I don't trust Cleveland.
The only way Baltimore have been in their last two games and won the other Thursday night is because their opponents allowed them into the game again. Cleveland, if Josh McCown can play the way he did in San Diego last week, they shut the door and get a big, big divisional win in Baltimore this Sunday.
I don't see it. All right, finally, Jacksonville at Tampa Bay.
Well, this is an awful game. It's right up there with the Saints versus the Eagles.
Yeah.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Do you think anybody in Tampa right now is wishing they'd taken Mariota with that first pick ahead of Jameis Winston?
I think a lot of people are, actually.
Four more interceptions he threw in the defeat to Carolina last week. One returned for a touchdown. And look, when he plays well, they've got half a chance, as they did in the win in New Orleans. But when he plays badly, boy, this is a bad team. They can't get anything going on offense. They can't stop anyone on defense. They can't get out of their own way. They've cut their kicker this week because he can't kick field goals. How do you make a case for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
I don't. I've got Jacksonville. I'm not trying to make a case for Tampa Bay.
I've got the Jags as well in this game.
All right, so we both have the Jacksonville Jaguars winning on the road, although it's just like down the street, really. They're just going down to Tampa Bay. There's something about Tampa Bay. As much as I respect and appreciate Lovie Smith, his offense just hasn't found it. I don't think they're going to find it this year with Winston. I think it's going to take them a couple years to develop. Jacksonville should do just fine. That means we only differ on two games, buddy. Pittsburgh at San Diego on Monday Night Football. Cleveland at Baltimore. I'm going to go with the Ravens. I think at home with a longer time to prepare, longer time to get some of those young guys ready to play football, I think they take care of Cleveland, because I'm just not trusting the Browns at all this year to get many more wins.
It's not going to be a pretty game. I'm not going to dress it up as anything but that. But Baltimore are flat out of options. I've heard for the last few weeks people talk about, look out for Max Williams, their second round pick tight end. He's got to step up with Crockett gone for a while as well. And you've seen nothing from him. Kamar Aiken.
He had two catches last week.
In an offense that had Steve Smith, you've got to step up. At some point, you've got to seize an opportunity, as tough as it might be if you're a rookie in this team. I go back to what we said earlier. Who is Kamar Aiken? Never heard of him. I'm not sure we ever will.
He's going to score two touchdowns this week. You watch.
Is that it? Can we quote you on that and come back to it?
Quote me. We'll come back to it. Well, we'll time stamp it 56 minutes. Wow, 56 minutes. We've done the whole show, buddy. I just got to go record an intro and I'm done.
Great. I love talking to you, man.
All right, man. It's great having you. Richard Graves of Sky Sports News. Check him out. Make sure you go out to skysports.com. Click the NFL section. Look at everything he has to say about all the games as he makes his picks. Thanks a lot for coming on, buddy.
Anytime. Enjoy it every time. Always good to chat.
All right, buddy. And I'm locking it in. Cleveland at Baltimore. That is the challenge game. Make sure you're watching that game.
I'm looking forward to hearing you eat humble pie next week.
Oh, not sure if I'm going to be eating any humble pie. Anyways, that's the challenge game. Cleveland at Baltimore. I've got the Ravens. Gravesy has Cleveland with the upset. I don't think it's going to happen. That's it. That's all the time I got for you. Week 5 is coming upon us. First off with the Colts and the Houston Texans. We both have Indianapolis to get the win, but just barely. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Stephen Miranda, and you've been listening to NFL Rants and Raves. We're out.